Hi, welcome to Lights, Camera, Author. I'm Jim Juno, and I have with me today a person who has been on the show before. We had him on the show for his book, Elvis and the Colonel. His name is Marshall Terrell, and he's back with us today to talk about a book which came out in 2012. It's called Steve McQueen, The Last Mile Revisited. Welcome, Marshall.
Hey, welcome. Hey, thanks for having me back.
Not a problem at all. Now we're going to go straight to the big news. Even though this book came out in 2012 and it was written by Barbara McQueen, Steve McQueen's widow, and yourself, but you got some big news to share with us, don't you?
And I spoke to Barbie about it today, asking for her approval. So she said, yes, absolutely. So we're going to do a documentary based on our book, and we'll film that at the end of February, early March. So we're going to bring to life this book that we're going to talk about today through a documentary.
Oh, fantastic. Do we have a completion date yet or anything like that, or is it just is the filming start?
The filming starts, the
Filming.
completion date, if we were to be optimistic, year and a half.
Okay.
Yeah, it just takes a while to get it shot, get it edited, and then sell it to a network.
Now this book, I'm going to repeat the title, Steve McQueen, The Last Mile Revisited. It's currently being published by Dalton Watson Fine Books. And this, like I said, it came out in 2012. It's not a new book, and it's not a new revision of it. But Amazon has it listed as a new release for some reason. And so if you're looking for it, you can pick it up online or at bn.com, or you can go in your bookstore and order it. This was a labor of love for Barbara McQueen, and I take for you too, right?
Well, yes, and it was, and it had a nice payoff at the end of it. So, when I think of labor of love, I think of something that takes years and is, painstaking. This book was written very quickly, produced quickly. So I don't know if I'd call it a labor of love. I would just say it was just a lot of fun to do because, as it turned out, Barbie lived at the time in Lake Havasu, Arizona, and I live in Phoenix. So it's only a 3-hour drive. So I think I drove out there over the course of 2 weekends, and we pretty much got this book. I recorded her text, and then I kind of went away for 6 to 9 6 months maybe, put it all together and matched it with her photos, and we got it done quickly. And the publisher turned it around very quickly because she at the time that the book came out, it actually came out in 2007. So, and she, it was to coincide with this big auction of her personal items that Steve McQueen had left behind to her. And so we wanted the book to come out at the same time because that auction was getting a lot of international attention. And so as a result, the book did too, which even led to an appearance on David Letterman, which just blew my mind. Turns out he's a
Amazing.
big Steve McQueen fan. So the book originally came out in 2007. And then we did some, I'm the kind of guy that even though I'm finished with a book, I'll still collect stories just in case there might be a revised and updated version. So we did that for this book in 2012 because the publisher had run out. I mean, it had gone out of print. So he printed up a new batch and he said, can we do something that will add some spice to it, add some more stories, add some more pictures? And I said, sure, let's do it. So she had lots of outtake pictures, and we interviewed some more people, and we updated it and changed the beginning and the end, and then added some passages in there. So that's the book that we're talking about.
Fantastic. Now, for those of you out there who are not aware who Steve McQueen was, he was basically one of the greatest actors of the 20th century. He was the highest paid actor in the world, I believe, like in the late 70s. He had no peers. I mean, he was the king of the cool actors. Matter of fact, I think that was his nickname, wasn't it? King of Cool.
That was, and people ask me today, well, who who now kind of is the Steve McQueen of our day? And of course, I always answer there. Well, there's really nobody. But if I had to pick one person that's close and who had the magnitude of his superstardom, probably Brad Pitt would be the closest. You know, at one time, I would have told you a decade earlier, it's Kevin Costner. But those guys are big Steve McQueen fans. And but Steve McQueen was the archetype for the modern day action hero that you see today. The he was, you know, back in the 40s and 50s, your leading men were big brawny guys like John Wayne and Gary Cooper. And then come the 60s, you had these guys that were what they called anti-heroes, Paul Newman, James Dean, Steve McQueen. And McQueen to me panned out to be, you know, the most anti-establishment of them all, because he was really cool and just kind of did his own thing and incorporated lots of little things from his personality into the script and into the movies. So a lot of his movies seem to be autobiographical, which made him really, really interesting because a lot of actors like to get lost in their characters. Steve McQueen kind of kept everything close to the vest and made it about him and conformed the movie to his personality. So that you've got a really interesting mix of superstar and his own personality in his movies.
And you mentioned the photos in this book. Now, there are over, I believe, over 100 photos that Barbara McQueen took most of them, but they also had pictures of people who Barbara McQueen and Steve McQueen together. It tells the 3.5 years of their being together up until Steve McQueen's death in 1980, I believe. So, but you know. What was it like digging through all those old photos? I mean, that had to be something thrilling to see.
It was thrilling. I was going to say fun, but I think thrilling is a better word. It was thrilling for me because that period, you know, after The Towering Inferno, which was released in December of 1974, it made $300 million worldwide, and McQueen reached the top. He really did reach the pinnacle, and in doing so, you know, he was always in this long foot race with Paul Newman. And in the picture, McQueen really emerged as a hero, and Paul Newman did not. And so McQueen had reached the pinnacle of his career and decided to drop out for a few years. So these photos were taken in that period where McQueen dropped out, grew his hair long, grew a beard, became unrecognizable, which is what he wanted to do because he wanted to find himself again. And with this relationship with Barbara, he was able to do that. And some of the things they did during this time of his incognito phase was, you know, they take long drives in pickup trucks from California to Idaho to Montana. And they wouldn't take freeways, they'd always take the back roads, and they'd stop and they'd take photos. And you know, he was a very, very private man. So for him to allow her to take photos of him during this phase and on the sets of his last two movies, Tom Horn and The Hunter, was really an extraordinary thing. And luckily, we had about, yes, you said there were like 100 photos, but we had about 500 or 600 photos to choose from. So there are a lot of outtakes from these sessions. And so we selected the best of them. And so there was a lot of cool stuff to work with there.
How hard was it cutting down from 500 to, say, 100 to 125?
It wasn't hard because, you know, it's easy to pick the best shots. And when I say outtakes, it could be, you know, like something was blurred or his eyes were closed or the shot wasn't quite what we wanted. I did a follow-up book to this called Steve McQueen, the King of Cool, a tribute to the King of Cool. And there are some outtake photos in there. I try to get these photos out there as much as possible. So, but it wasn't hard.
What was
And
that?
they also had to fit the storyline too. So, you know, we were going along this order. But what was interesting was usually when you write a story, you go chronologically. We had to write stories around these photos in order to make the text work. So when you read when you read about Steve, you had to have a photo of that representing him. So that's what made this book kind of an interesting challenge.
Now, I was reading in the promotional material for the book that she had not picked up. Well, she was a photographer first. First, very, very first, she was a model, and then she became a photographer. Almost as a, it was almost as a hobby, but she was very, very good at it. And but then again, though, I mean, how did they meet? Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, he saw her in an ad. I think it was a Club Med ad, and it was a picture of her and this other lady. And this picture's in the book, and it's a picture of the two wearing a bathing suit. But it's capturing their back. And so she's walking, but she jumps in the air and she clicks her heels like those old time cartoons. And this really struck him as kind of funny. And so he was leafing through this magazine on an airplane, and he said, "I want to meet that lady." And so Steve knew her agent, who was Nina Blanchard. It seems like all the actors know all the modeling agents, managers, for various reasons. But McQueen called Nina Blanchard, and I spoke to Nina Blanchard about this. So I got it from Barbie's perspective and Nina's perspective, and he said there's a part of an Indian princess I want her to play, and I'd like to meet her. And she goes, "Well, Steve, I read that script, and there's no part of an Indian princess." So she knew what he was up to, but she set up a meeting anyway. She said to Barbie, "You want to meet the star of the Towering Inferno?" And Barbie thought she was going to meet Paul Newman, not Steve McQueen. And so when he walked out and they met at the Beverly Hills Hotel, he was in that phase where she thought she was meeting Paul Newman. She said, "Out walks this scraggly haired bearded guy with these intense blue eyes." And she thought he looked like a bum. But in the course of this meeting, a 2 hour meeting, he talked, and she said, "I just fell in love with this guy." And so he took her out for he had her they were he was he had a suite there at the hotel, and so he invited her for dinner up in his room, and then they took this long drive up the coast, and so that's where she says she fell in love with him. He was just a different kind of guy. He was intense, but there was something about him that she said he was a bad boy, and that she loved bad boys, and he was the ultimate bad boy.
One of the things I remember reading in the book is that that's what impressed her, that Steve McQueen did things his way. And if you don't, it wasn't like, I'm going to talk to the director and see if we can do it this way. It's like, no, this is the way I'm going to do it. So he kind of, when you say he was like a, well, he was a, it was no nonsense. It was like, this is how we're going to do it my way.
He's not alone in that, because I read a lot of movie star bios. A lot of the big movie stars are like that. They want to preserve an image. They want to preserve what they feel is their integrity. And so, yes, while they have these big time directors directing them, they're really running the show. And they're the ones who attach their name, and they're the ones who get the movies made. So there's kind of an inherent understanding when you get to the level of superstardom like McQueen. And again, referring to Warren Beatty and Robert Redford and all the other celebrity books that I've read on actors that are of that ilk, that they all fall in line to the same sort of thinking that, it's their show. You're just kind of along for the ride and capture their good side.
How did you meet Barbara McQueen, or did she seek you out?
Well, she sought me out, but what happened was is that we were both when McQueen documentaries come out, they always kind of seek out the same people. But Barbara hadn't spoken, so she did this interview for this documentary, and a lady, a producer by the name of Mimi Friedman, interviewed me, and she interviewed me for like 3 hours, and so A few weeks later, she says the producer said that he only wants to get people, only wants people to appear that knew McQueen to make it more personal. She goes, "But I have a consolation for you." I said, "Yeah, what's that?" She said, "Barbara McQueen wants to do a photo book and she wants to talk to you and meet you and see if you want to do it." So she hooked us up on the phone, and that's when I found out that she lived in Lake Havasu. And then the funny thing was is that her photos were all on slides, so that when we when when I started interviewing her, it was, she gave me one of those old slideshows from the 70s, like when you'd gather
Yeah.
around the table. So that's how she showed me all these photos. I said, "Well, we got to get these slides converted." And so that's what we did. So she showed me the slides, recorded her comments, and then of course later we got the slides converted into high resolution photos. And but again, the book came together very quickly. It was fun to do, and the pub we already had a publisher lined up even before I had a proposal written. Dalton Watson, Glenn Morse, who was the publisher, Dalton Watson instantly recognized the sellability of the book, and as it turns out, it's their best-selling book in Dalton Watson history. So he was very he not only took a chance, but boy, he got rewarded very well for him taking a chance. So and we were happy with it, and he was the first publisher that I'd ever come across when we did this book. It was a beautiful limited edition coffee table book, and he said, "Like, what more can we do to add elements to make it better, to improve the quality?" And I wasn't used to dealing with a publisher like that, because publishers are always looking to save money, and he was willing to add a little bit more so that he could get a little bit more. So in this case, the book had a slip cover, it was on the highest quality paper, and then I had a tape of McQueen talking, giving an interview, and so he turned that into a CD that was attached to the back of the book, and then limited edition signed by both of us. So it was just a really unique opportunity and a fun way to do a book. And then of course then it went into hardback, and then we did the revision. So we've done a lot with the book in terms of promotion and in terms of just keeping it alive, which and he still tells me he sells quite a few copies a month.
And now it's going to be a documentary.
Yeah, and that's going to keep the book alive, which I think is great. And but the documentary is going to be fun because you'll get to see who Barbie is. It's one thing to read somebody's words and you get an idea of their personality, and then it's another when you see them on camera and you see B-roll footage doing of her taking photos and her process, and then how the pictures hang on her wall in her house, and her house is a trip too. So it's going to be a visually pleasing. And she lives up near Ketchum, Idaho, where it's snowy and in the mountains, and it's just going to have this beautiful look to it. So we're really excited about it.
I believe that's Ernest Hemingway's town too, isn't it?
That is correct. Hemingway is all over that town, and yeah, the home where he his final home where he had committed suicide is there. But even his as a matter of fact, Barbara had owned a house that she sold to the actress Margot Hemingway at one time.
Oh.
So there's all sorts of connections with the Hemingway family there.
You know, it's amazing that she had kept these pictures tucked away. They had not seen the light of day since he had died. And now I believe in 2005 or 2007 is when she opened it up. Is that basically because she was then 50 years old also?
Yeah, she had just turned 50, and that's funny when I wrote that. And I just turned 60, so in her mind, her turning 50 was a milestone, and every decade is a milestone. Yeah, her turning 50 was the milestone because I think she was 26 when he passed away, and so there had been enough time to where she could heal, because his time in Mexico was a very, very dark thing. He sought alternative treatment in Mexico, and it turned out it was quackery, and so she watched all that go down, and so it you know it was a long she watched him die for almost a period of a year, so it was very, very painful to her, and still is. And as a matter of fact, she still doesn't watch any of his movies because it's like he comes to life again. And but she could handle looking at the photos that she did, and those were fun times. Those were times before he was sick. So in the book, she says outright, "I'm not going to talk about that last year of his life. I only want to talk about the happy and good things that I remember about Steve." And that's the script that we stuck to.
And
So
that's what comes across in the book too, is that yes, I mean, she talks about his, she had a feeling with Tom Horn, the movie Tom Horn, that this was going to be his last movie.
Well,
Or
yes,
the
it was
Hunter
this,
eventually was.
yeah, The Hunter was his last movie, but she knew that Tom Horn, he was talking maybe on Tom Horn about retiring from the movie industry, but me personally, I don't know, because he got paid so well. A lot of people talk about retiring from the industry, but the paycheck's so good that. But what he would have done probably was become a character actor, and he would have become like they do these days when you have a seasoned actor. He's no longer a star, but you still want to see him, and that generation that grew up with him want to see him. So I could have easily seen him going that route, or he would have continued to have a career like Paul Newman, I think.
Yeah, or he could have gone on TV and be a murder detective. You know, a lot of them do that.
And he, as in Bolt, he played a detective. So him as an older, grizzled detective, that would be a fun scenario.
Well, he actually was on, a lot of people don't realize this, he was on TV before he actually got into movies.
That's right. He was on Wanted, Dead or Alive for
Live, yeah.
three seasons, and that's really where he learned. He claims that's where he learned acting for the camera, because he studied in New York, but that was for the stage. And Wanted, Dead or Alive was his training ground.
What was the, did you find out anything that you did not expect to find?
With Barbara's book, yeah, there were just glimpses of his personality that I got. He definitely mellowed, I guess, in those years, you could say. But some of that temper would show up in some of these stories, of course. Like, for example, the Keith Moon story, where Moon had this stained glass window in Malibu, and he'd keep that light on at night. It would shine into McQueen's window, and so one night McQueen decides he's going to take care of the matter, and he pulls out his 12 gauge shotgun and blows out Moon's windows from afar. Now, it's a funny story, but had Moon been in there, or somebody been in there, and something happened, it wouldn't be so funny. But
No,
yes, and what I guess the thing that really came out was those last days, and his turn towards spirituality, him seeking something beyond himself, because before he met Barbara, he'd been a pretty selfish person his whole life, and he started to mellow and change quite a bit. And then he met this pilot named Sammy Mason, who taught him how to fly. And Sammy was a born again Christian, and Steve kind of watched him from afar. And just one day he said, "Something different about you. What is it?" And he said, "Well, Steve, I'm a born again Christian." And so Steve decided that he wanted to start going to church with Sammy. And this is all before he was diagnosed with cancer. So, I'd heard that story, but I'd never heard it up close and personal like Barbara told it. So I knew then that it was legitimate. For example, I said, "Well, how did he tell you that you guys were going to go to church?" She said, "Well, just one day he came home and said, 'Honey, we're getting the car. We're going to go to Walmart. We're going to go buy you some dresses.'" And, she talked about his legendary cheapness. And so he decided that he was going to buy her two dresses at Walmart for like 10 bucks a piece, but made sure she had some really nice shoes. So he said, "We're going to go to church every Sunday." And so she didn't question it. She just said, "Okay." And so she was there by his side, and before they got married, they took Bible lessons, and life was really, really good, and he was in a very happy place, and then he gets diagnosed with cancer.
You know, it also gave a glimpse into his. I did not know that he was a antique car and motorcycle collector.
Yeah, that craze, he might have started that. I'm not sure, but he was kind of the first celebrity to have lots and lots of cars, not just like four or five in the driveway, but I think at last count he had like almost like 130 motorcycles and 52 cars. And when he lived in Santa Paula, he had this build this special barn slash garage for all of his cars, and then that was at his home. And then keep in mind that he also had a hangar where he had two airplanes, and he kept all of his antiques in the airplane too. So he was he did antique shopping, and he bargain shopped on his own. And like when he shopped, he'd go to these dealers and say, "I want this, I want this, I want this whole lot. I'm going to come back later with a truck, hold all this stuff for me." But he'd also, offer them a price. Not two or three times the amount, but two or three times less, because he was a bargain shopper. It seemed as to me as if he was buying up all the stuff that he grew up with or wanted in his childhood, because all those antiques were like from the 30s and the 40s, but really cool stuff.
You know, there was one picture in there that Barbara, I guess, or you wrote that it exemplified Steve McQueen. And that is a picture of him holding a beer, standing in the desert, smoking a cigarette. And under the caption, it was like, this was the quintessential Steve McQueen photo.
Yeah, that sounds like it. I mean, he was the funny thing was he liked cheap beer, he everybody today goes to a microbrewery or drinks craft beer, but McQueen and Newman and all the stars of Lee Marvin, they all drink, Budweiser. Steve liked Old Milwaukee. That was his preference, but they used to call it piss water. And that's the kind of beer that they drank, was the old fashioned piss water with like 2% alcohol. But they'd drink it pretty much nonstop all day. And I could never figure out how they were able to like keep their physiques, because they were perfect specimens.
I tell you what, speaking of perfect specimens, the book is Steve McQueen, The Last Mile Revisited. Marshall Terrell and Barbara McQueen. Well, Barbara McQueen is the author, and Marshall Terrell is also, would you say co-author of this book?
Yes.
Okay, co-author. It's available now. You can get it at Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com, or just go into your brick and mortar store and or have them order it.
Or DaltonWatson.com. That might be the best place to get it, because they always have a full stock.
Fantastic. Well, Marshall, again, thank you for being on Lights, Camera, Author again.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.